This is the Brain Language Podcast.
Welcome to the Brain Language Podcast, where we discuss NLP concepts to help you in your business and your life. I'm Morgan Jobe.
And I'm Susan Stageman. And today, the title of this episode is called Sleep, Baby, Sleep. You know, Morgan, as a coach and a trainer, I'm getting more and more requests from people to help them with their lack of ability to fall asleep or stay asleep and get restful sleep. So I thought we'd talk about sleep. And what is nice about this is that we are dovetailing this with this episode that we did last month about calming your neurological system and dealing with the effects of stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this sleep is a huge issue for most people. I was, you know, reading about this a little bit as well, outside of your own experience with clients requesting some help with this. And I think it's, you could classify it as like a serious problem. Most people are sleep deprived.
Oh, absolutely. And it rolls into a lot of things that we talked about last month, but it mm-hmm. also, you know, when people say, well, they can't lose weight, or, you know, they're mm-hmm. having to take drugs, or they're depressed or whatever. Oftentimes that has to do with not only has the amount of sleep they get, but the quality of sleep. When people come to me, they want to fall asleep, they want to stay asleep, and they want to get restful sleep so that when they wake up, they feel rested, not like they've been, you know, to war all night. So I thought sleep would be a great topic. And recently I have worked with a client on this very topic, and he's doing some of the things that I suggested, which I will mention, and it's working for him. So let's talk about sleep. And this, again, comes in right in after you were talking about managing stress last month. And by the way, that episode is live now and available for downloading. But sleep is a big part of managing this stress. So
yeah.
I thought we'd talk first about why people can't fall asleep. And I think with just the pace of today, the number of balls in the air that people have to keep track of, it's, you know, life is stressful. And then, you know, we sit and we watch the evening news, or we look at our news source and we wonder, can it get any worse than this? It can, folks. So just don't worry about it. You know, it's been a lot worse than other times. So we just happen to know more about it than we used to. But that still affects us. It's this constant bombardment of stray meteorites of information that we can't do anything about. And that in itself is stressful. And then we try to sleep with all of that ruminating on our mind. And it makes it sometimes for a lot of people impossible. So a lot of times people complain about, you know, they go about their day, they're busy doing this and that. And a lot of all of that brain thinking process, things that are, they kind of get pushed into the background. And so it's there, but we're not aware of it. Well, then we get into bed and we turn everything off, we turn the light off, and boom, you know, it's like an explosion of videos and conversations and all this. It has been going on, but since it's not, it was in the background, now it's come to the forefront because everything else is quiet. And so that's the time when developing some of these habits and using some of the techniques that we're going to talk about can really help people get control of the sleep mechanism so they can consistently have the sleep that they want. So when we lay down and we close our eyes and all that comes to the surface, we want to make sure that we have things that we can do in order to take it down, stop it, do whatever we want to do. Now, first thing I want people to know is that one of the reasons they don't fall asleep, and they, you know, they have all this stuff going on in their mind, but it's tension in our muscles. So if you get into bed and you've been thinking about something, or now you start to think about something, that thinking causes our muscles to tense. And then the tension causes the thinking to keep going. So it's like a loop, and it makes it hard for a person to get drowsy. So that's one thing that we're going to look at, is how to turn that off and how to relax our muscles so that we can slow the thinking down. And we're going to talk about breathing. Also, we talked about that last month, how important slowing the breathing is down. But I'm getting ahead of myself because I'm very excited about what we're going to tell you. But the second thing is screen time. And I know. But let me tell you, I did a search for how screen time, our phones, iPads, whatever we're using, affects our brain activity, not only in kids, but adults also. And oftentimes, one of the last things that people do before they go to bed is they check their email on their phone or Facebook, or they watch some video on YouTube. There's a huge amount of research from Harvard, you know, the State University of New York by Pottsboro, just on and on and on and on and on. Billions of hits on how screen time is not good for you, especially when you go to right before you go to bed. So that's one thing. I know it becomes a habit, but you can create a habit of falling asleep and staying asleep and waking up when you want to. But screen time, if you're one of those people that uses screen time before you go to bed, I mean, look, checking your phone, you all know what I mean. It really disrupts your sleep. So I took some information from the State University of New York. They had a real nice article online, and I'm going to talk about part of it because I think it's, you know, just don't take my word for it. That's what I'm trying to say.
You've got proof, got evidence.
That's proof, and I'm telling you right now, here it is. But they said that this screen time disrupts sleep and desynchronizes the body clock. So the light from the screen devices mimics daylight or daytime. So it suppresses melatonin. Well, guess what? People take melatonin in order to fall asleep. So if you're doing something that suppresses melatonin in your body, it's going to make it more difficult. The sleep signal is released by darkness. So in just minutes of screen stimulation, that can delay the melatonin release for hours and desynchronize the body clock. And then once the body clock's disrupted, all sorts of unhealthy reactions occur. Hormone imbalance, brain inflammation. Wow, that's good. So all of that high arousal doesn't permit deep sleep. And deep sleep is how we heal things. And we talked about that last month when we did the stress.
Yeah, you know, I've got a friend of mine that I talk to fairly frequently, and she has expressed this issue with sleeping many, many times. And with her, I've found that I think it's the tendency to be a bit of a night owl.
Sure.
Too. I would say there's probably also like a stress emotional component involved in it too. But I know that she does keep very late hours. And I mean, I was doing some reading on this subject as well. And, you know, shift workers, those people that work night shifts, have some of the, you know, statistically, they are worse health outcomes than any other part of the population.
Right.
In terms of their cardiovascular health, metabolic health, susceptibility, things like cancer, also vulnerability to, you know, things like depression, kind of the mental health issues.
Right.
Just simply because they're in this constant state of being exposed to light at the wrong time.
Right.
And we're just not designed to be nocturnal.
Right. Yes, that's so important. Being a night owl, and I would love to be a night owl. And when I was a lot younger, I was. But in my wisdom and older age, I have stopped myself from doing that because Even though, you know, I'd love to stay up and watch that next episode of whatever I'm watching, I make myself stop. I do something else. So the last thing I do is not just turn off the TV and have that ruminating in my mind. I often do, you know, French lesson or something like that. And then I do some things in the kitchen and do that before. And I have this little routine, but it doesn't include watching TV or anything. And I make myself go to bed. I start that routine at a certain time, much earlier, because I find that if I stay up till 1 or 2 in the morning, my day the next day, even if it's a weekend, is just not up to par. And I really like to have that energy during the day. I don't want to be taking a nap afternoon. I would rather, although sometimes naps can be helpful, I would rather have the daytime to do things. But you're absolutely right. I've seen those studies with people who work all night and it screws up their circadian rhythm. My dad did the same thing. And we used to tell him, Dad, your circadian rhythms all, and he had it backwards. I mean, he was sleeping all day and staying up all night. And as a result, was not very healthy. So a word to the wise, I guess. So that's one thing. Then we talked about the light at night from electronics has also been linked to depression. Now, it doesn't say, it says linked to depression, doesn't say causes depression. So let's just make that, words are important here, linked to depression and suicide risk in a number of studies. Also, even in animal studies have shown that screen-based light before, during sleep causes depression, even when the animal isn't looking at the screen, which I thought was interesting. And with kids, I mean, this has become at the forefront of discussion because of all the screen time that kids are getting. And a lot of parents are reluctant to reduce or restrict electronics in a kid's room because they worry about the state of despair the child will enter. But in fact, it does just the opposite. A child is much more grounded and centered and healthy with a sense of well-being if you remove the light at night, the screen at night, instead of having them, you know, being under the covers looking at their screen. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that screen time induces stress reactions. When we talked about this last month, is the fight or flight, acute stress and chronic stress produces changes in brain chemistry and hormones, and that can increase irritability and depression. It can actually be, people can have angry outbursts because of what happens. The chronic stress hormone, cortisol, can be both a cause and an effect of depression, which it creates a vicious cycle. So both hyperarousal and addiction pathways suppress the brain's frontal lobe, which is the area where mood regulation takes place. So those three things alone, hopefully, will encourage people to cut off their screen time well before they go to bed so that they have a running chance of having, you know, some real restful sleep and some healing during that time. And then the last thing why people don't fall asleep is they don't have a routine. And that is one thing I guess I've discovered over the years is that I have had a routine. I don't know, maybe when I was a student, I began to understand the value of having a routine, even though I was very stressed with all the work, you know, the homework and the research and the things that I was doing in school. But not having that routine made me less effective. So I learned how to have a routine. And it's changed over the years, but it's still a routine. How about you? Do you have a routine?
In terms of like going to bed?
Yes.
I wouldn't say that I have a formal routine. You know, I would say it's fairly consistent.
Yeah.
In about the time that I go to bed, and which is helpful.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't always the case for sure. And I did have an issue with screen time.
Okay.
Before I went to bed, before I knew about these things. I think iPads are probably one of the contributing factors to that. I would sit in bed and read that thing
Oh my God.
Before I went to bed, and I had like absolutely no idea. I didn't know anything about this. It was years ago. And so I have, I go to bed fairly consistently about the same time, which is helpful. And I generally don't, drink caffeine too late. And
No,
yeah,
yeah,
so.
we'll talk about that because a lot of people have realized that drinking coffee, after 6 o'clock at night will produce sleeplessness. So they don't.
And Susan, I just thought of something as you mentioned this routine. It just occurred to me. I've seen a lot of people, especially very successful people, talk about, these morning routines, or these, super successful business people have their morning routines. They get up at a certain time, they do this meditation, they eat this thing. I've never heard anyone talk about like an evening routine. And that's probably just as important, if not more important.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that as a comment to that, I think that a lot of times when people are talking about their success and that sort of thing, they're talking about their day. They don't necessarily talk about what goes on after hours. I mean, they may have generalizations like they don't do drugs and they exercise and that sort of thing. But I would say they probably do have somewhat of a routine even when they go to bed. So let's go ahead and talk about how can NLP, because this is a podcast about NLP, help us when it comes to getting a good night's sleep. And I have a number of things that we're going to talk about. So even if all you need is a routine, which is a strategy, NLP was designed to help people model other people with good strategies. So if you don't have a routine, you go to someone who has good sleeping habits and is able to sleep, and you say, well, how do you do that? I mean, even an informal strategy elicitation can give you some larger chunks, some of the micro chunks that a person might use, and the sequence of it so that they can adjust, your questioner can adjust their behavior and try it out. And you might ask several people because I'm sure their routines are going to be different. And it would be interesting to find out if you do a number of people, strategy elicitation, if there are common elements in it, that would be of interest to me. So just remember, a strategy is a step-by-step process that gets consistent results. So if you know someone that is able to fall asleep consistently, they've oftentimes have a simple routine. They prepare for bed in the same way, regardless of what that is. It could be relaxing, reading a book, drinking herbal tea. It doesn't matter what you do, as long as it involves some kind of a letting go of the day, something that doesn't involve screen time, and something that doesn't involve alcohol or eating a heavy meal. Some people drink chamomile tea to relax them. That's fine. I like to read before I go to bed. Now, a lot of the articles that I read said you don't read. Well, here's what I do. Because that's my main reading time is I get into bed. My husband's already asleep. So I get into bed and I'm all nice and toasty. And I read with a red light rather than a white light, because a red light is, and you can get these, they're really easy to find. I have three or four of them. They're battery, they have AAA batteries in them, and they're like for camping. You have a real bright white light, like a flashlight, LED flashlight, but with it comes another light, which is red. And I read with a red light, and that puts me in a sleep faster than almost anything. If I turn on the white wider light or the my nightstand light, that wakes me up.
Do you think that maybe you've also sort of anchored yourself to red light?
Actually, yes, and actually I've done research on the red light thing. So even if I happen to wake up in the middle of the night and something's on my mind and I can't seem to move it off the plate, I'll grab my book, but I always read with the red light because I don't want to fully wake up. The white light will make you fully wake up, and I don't want to do that.
Yeah. So, I know the military uses it when they conduct night operations. They'll use a red light.
Yeah,
I think it doesn't travel as far. It's not as easy to see.
Yeah,
by the enemy. So
yeah. Anyway, so going back to prepare for bed the same way every night, whatever that is, whatever little routine you have or strategy, and then go to bed at the same time. Most people that consistently sleep well have a bedtime. And with few exceptions, they manage to get into bed. My husband, I can set the atomic clock by him. He, you know, at 8:30, he starts his routine. And that's to take the dogs out one more time for a few minutes. And then he comes back in and he gets on his, you know, little jammy, whatever he wears. And then he marches with what he calls bed cookies for the dogs. The bedroom, and they go bouncing in. Of course, his Stella will stay there because Stella's kind of his attached dog, but Max will come out and be with me until I go to bed. But it's at 9 o'clock. I could set the atomic clock by it. At 9 o'clock, he is on his way to the bedroom. So going to bed at the same time is really important. Then the other thing I wanted to mention was removing the light. A lot of time, I don't like digital clocks. I like analog clocks anyway. I guess that, you know, shows my generation. But a lot of the, you know, the digital clocks they're light. And so I remove the light, turn them off, or from other electronics. We don't have a TV in the bedroom. Sometimes when I go to hotel rooms and I can't remove the electronic lights, or I can't move them from my line of sight, I take dark colored post-it notes so I can just cover the electronic lights. I know that seems kind of silly, but it really does help me if I can't move something, so that if I open my eyes, I see that, or it's shining on my eye, you know, eyelids. But this routine will also include avoiding checking your phone or screen, watching TV in bed, eating heavy foods or drinking alcohol or drinks or alcohol with caffeine. All of those need to be avoided at least, I think it's an hour, maybe two, before you go to bed. So that's the routine. Whatever it is, make it consistent. That I think will really help people. So then once you have this routine in place, there are all kinds of tricks and techniques for the occasional stress we might experience. Now, I think every once in a while, I'll have one of those nights where something is rolling around in my head and I can't seem to stop it. The first thing that I do is I relax my body. Remember, we talked about that at the beginning. Thinking creates tension. Tension creates thinking. So it's this loop that people get into. So if you have to stretch your calves before you get into bed, or, you know, do neck rolls, relax your facial muscles. There's a technique that we used to do when I did yoga, which is to just lie there and tense your whole body, just every, you know, your curl your toes and your finger, everything, your face, scrunch it all up, and then just let it go all at once. And one of the things that does is it gives your body, let the feeling, feel the difference in the comparison, so that it allows your body to untense or to relax in a much more effective way. But invariably, when I can't fall asleep, it is because I have tension in my body. And, you know, through years of meditation and Silva and the Mind Masters, I just know what my body feels like when it's relaxed. So I just do a fractional relaxation. I just start at the head and I let that feeling just flow down. Somebody talked about, yeah, just like having warm honey poured all over your body, which sounded really sticky to me, but it really worked for her. So there you go. So that's the one thing. And, you know, you mentioned last month about how relaxing your body can relieve a lot of stress.
Yeah, the The technique that I typically do is similar to what you described there. I'll do a sort of progressive relaxation, just focusing my attention like on the top of my head and then moving all the way down to my feet gradually. And well, it gives your mind something to think about, right? It brings you
That is
to
true.
this moment, and that what you're thinking about is, like, you know, if you're thinking about your hand or your elbow, there's nothing particularly stimulating about that, right? As opposed to, you know, what someone said to you or what happened today at work. So that in and of itself is sort of neutral, but this, that progressive step by step going brings you back to yourself in the moment, and you're thinking about relaxing that part of the body. And that in of itself, I find beneficial. And you asked me that, you know, do you have a routine? That's actually one thing that I do pretty consistently every night.
Yeah, good.
Takes like one or 2 minutes.
Yeah. And it doesn't take that long. And once you get into the habit of it, it's really pretty easy. So then the next thing, so the first thing is make sure your body is relaxed. Relax your body. We're talking about a fractional relaxation. I have a fractional relaxation that's available for people that I did years and years and years ago before there was a thing called streaming. And I can still send it to people if they're interested. So relaxing the body. Then the next thing I think is extremely important. Tell yourself what you want. I mean, this is such a little thing, but I think it really is effective. And it's tell yourself that you're going to fall asleep, stay asleep until I'm ready to wake up. And of course, unless there's danger or someone calls me. So that's the next thing I do is I just say, I'm going to fall asleep, stay asleep until I'm ready to wake up, unless there's danger or someone calls me. And by the way, turn your phones off unless you're a physician on call. And nobody really needs to have, in fact, I have my phone by my bed, but it's turned upside down so I can't see the screen. And it's turned basically, in shutdown mode so that it's not turned off. But I can't hear calls or notifications or anything like that. So tell yourself that I'm going to fall asleep, stay asleep until I'm ready to wake up. All right. So that's the second one. Then the third one, if nothing else, relax your jaw and eyelids. Eyelids are the easiest muscles in the body to relax. Your jaw, we carry a tremendous stress in our jaw. Make sure that you're relaxing your jaw. One of the ways you can do that is put the tip of your tongue on the top of the roof of your mouth. That helps. Now, next thing, and this is where we start to use submodalities. I love submodalities. I think submodalities is the key to everything when it comes to managing your experience. So you visualize a very relaxing scene, like a lake that's got so calm that it's got glass-like water. I mean, it's just so serene, so calm. And I used to have this little technique. I still use it once in a while where if I'm very agitated, I'll go in and look at my inner lake and it'll be real choppy water. And so I just smooth it out. I smooth the water out first. And that makes me relaxed. Physically, you can also do a beautiful landscape, the ocean on a calm, beautiful day, a time when you were in nature and fell asleep. All of these, we all have something where we had a very relaxing experience. That's what I want you to call up. And then you can use some modalities to adjust the color and movement, even the location, internal location. You can just experiment with this because you want to find out what is going to cause your body to relax the most. Now, this is kind of interesting that I just discovered recently. So this year, when I decorated for the holidays, I was a little lazy. And so I just got a bunch of strings of those little white lights, right? And I strung them around our open area in our home. you know, the dining and living areas and TV room. So I just strung them over. And what I'd noticed was when I turned them on at night, it provided light, but just that kind of twilight. And we'd be sitting watching television and I'd feel my eyelids. I couldn't really focus on the TV. I had to turn on a light to really concentrate so that, you know, in my mind, the submodality for relaxing myself is more of a twilight than dark, dark, and or something a little bit brighter, like a lamp on or something like that. So it's kind of this twilight light that I have that helps me when I need to adjust pictures. That really helps me, the twilight look.
But you're outside looking at the stars, right?
Yeah, I'm outside looking at the stars. It's really, really kind of interesting. And I never realized, I thought, oh, this will be enough light. Yeah, it's enough light if you just want to not really pay attention to anything. It kind of really slows your brain down. All right. So go ahead and experiment with submodalities. If you've got a lot of, if you've got a lot of chatter in your head, slow the chatter down, move the chatter to a different location in your head, push it away from you, put it behind you. One of the things I think key is the location. And the second one is to go ahead and slow it way down. And movies also, videos, oftentimes when we're yakking at ourselves about something that's, you know, in the future, in the past, there's a speed to it. Slow the speed down. That can really help relax your body and make it not as important for you to pay attention to it at the time. Then the fifth thing, so we have relax your body, tell yourself that you're falling asleep, staying asleep, etc. Relax your jaw and eyelids. Then visualize a relaxing scene. Use submodalities to adjust what you need to adjust to make yourself relax. But the fifth thing is counting. Now, counting seems to be very popular, and it works for a lot of people. And there's all kinds of things, all kinds of counting exercises. One is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 3, 4, and so on. It's very monotonous, but you have to really think about it to keep track of it. And again, like you were saying, something that distracts you, like the fractional relaxation, can take your mind off of what's generating sleeplessness and put you into more of a relaxed state. So that's one thing. Counting backwards from 100. I told my sister-in-law how to do that. And she said, sometimes I get all the way down to one, but she said, most of the time I fall asleep way before that. So That's good. Then you mentioned this last month, number 6, slowing your breathing. I've started doing that, Morgan, and I'm telling you, I take control over my breathing and I slow it down. And I don't take deep breaths, you know, big, deep breaths. I just slow the breathing down by about half and run it myself rather than having my autonomic nervous system. And I started doing that. Man, I fall asleep within minutes of doing
that. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it is so powerful.
You know, years ago when I first started taking NLP classes from you, I remember that you mentioned how changing your physiology has a profound effect on changing your experience, you know, right, mentally, emotionally. And, you know, while I understood that, I didn't fully grasp the significance of that at the time. I do now. And a particular practice that I learned deals with breathing is geared towards stress management, you know, reducing stress, but it's can be really effective for before you go to bed. I've done it before and it works great. And that is to focus your attention around the area where your heart is in your chest.
Yes.
And then imagine if you could breathe in through your heart. And then exhale through your heart area. And do that on a pace of somewhere around 5 to 6 seconds. It doesn't have to be exact, but in that neighborhood there. And what this does, and they actually have loads of studies on this, it balances your autonomic nervous system.
Interesting.
So if you know, you think someone has their minds kind of racing at night, thinking about things, they're probably in a sympathetic nervous system dominant state. And so this is going to bring it back to a balanced state. And just doing that for a few minutes, like 3 minutes, maybe four, is going to put you in a state that essentially prepares you to sleep if that's what you want to do.
Sure. That's something I will try. I think that's a great idea. So again, slowing your breathing. And what Morgan mentioned was breathing in from your heart. And I will try that. Now, yeah. there's a couple of other things. You know, when you count, you can see the numbers. So you involve more of your modalities, which helps distract you from something else that you're thinking about. Or one of the things that I do, and this is part of a Silva technique, is to write the word deeper it mentally, like say on a chalkboard, or you could write it on a whiteboard, and then overwrite it. And you can even combine that with numbers. So you say 100, and then you go deeper, and you erase 100, and you go 99, and then you.
So you're doing this in your imagination.
Yeah, you do it in your imagination. And I'm telling you, usually I don't normally even get to 96 when you add the deeper, when I'm just gone. And I wake up in the morning and think, when did I fall asleep? Because I don't remember exactly when that last conscious thought was. And then the last thing is, you know, some people like very cool to cold air temperatures when they sleep. And oftentimes when people do sleep studies, you know, a formal sleep studies in a facility, they have the person sleeping in 55 degrees. So there's something for having the air be cold. I have a hard time sleeping, staying asleep when it's too warm and the air temperature is too warm.
I was reading something about that, like on a neuroscience, they said that if your body temperature, you can drop it a couple of degrees, it'll help you to sleep more, help you sleep better.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So NLP techniques to help you. We've mentioned this before, submodalities. Adjust your pictures for relaxation. And this is something that you're going to have to experiment with individually because everyone's different. If you have pictures that are causing mental activity, try shrinking them down and including the videos, you know, shrink them down, make them black and white. That's just a suggestion. You're going to have to experiment with it. One of the things that it's worked really well for a number of my clients, I just made this up one day, is I had them create mental lockers. And on each locker, there was a locker named work and a locker named family and locker named vacation, whatever locker they needed, you know, so they could have all kinds of lockers. And then if they're thinking about something, say for work, that they take the whole system, a synesthesia, the sound, the picture, and the feeling, and you put them in your mental locker and you close the door and it says work on it. And then you can open them up when you're awake. But that seems to compartmentalize what may be going on in your mind. A lot of people think about things that they at night that they absolutely can do nothing about. Well, if that's true, then put it in your mental locker, you know, named work or family or whatever it is, and leave it there so that you can get a good night's sleep. Because whatever it is, if it's a problem, you'll be clearer about it in the morning if it doesn't prevent you from falling asleep. One of the things that you can do, third thing is, tell your unconscious to work on it, whatever it is, a problem or worry, while you sleep deeply and soundly. So let your unconscious do that. The only drawback with that, Morgan, is that sometimes people wake up and they feel like they've been through a ringer, you know, they've been through the war because their mind was working on it so hard. So you have to tell yourself while sleeping deeply and soundly, otherwise you may wake up and feel like you run a marathon.
The mind is an amazing thing.
It sure is. Now, another NLP technique is a six-step reframe. And you want to work with the part of you that keeps you awake. So you find the positive intention and negotiate with that part to find better ways to get that intention so you can get your outcome, which is to get a good night's sleep. And those of you that are familiar with NLP probably have had the six-step reframe or some iteration of it in your training. You can actually negotiate with the part yourself and have your creative part or idea generating part come up with ideas for this part to use and just get the part to agree that this would be appropriate for helping you get what you want and help the the part get its positive intention. So that's the six-step reframe. Very, very powerful. The other thing that I think would be great is do a circle of excellence each night before you go to bed. And in your circle, you see yourself experience yourself as relaxed and drowsy and just ready for a good night's sleep. And do that, do the circle of excellence consistently until your body has the pattern. Again, some modalities you can use to make sure that when you step into your circle, when you step into yourself, that you're feeling just very, very relaxed and ready to fall asleep and get a good night's sleep. So you want to practice that until the body gets the pattern. And then the sixth thing is to change your mental channel, like a TV channel. Now they have streaming channels that is just all relaxation, right? All relaxation yeah. and that sort of thing. Just turn it to that channel and leave the other one off. So for those of you that understand what I'm saying, younger folks, they know exactly what I'm saying is you just change your channel to the TV channel and you keep changing it because it is amazing to me, Morgan, how people let their mind run them. Your mind is part of your body and system. You're the one that's in control. Take control of it so that you can have exactly what you want. I don't understand why people let their minds run themselves amok, so to speak.
Well, then, that's why they take NLP is so they can learn how to run their mind, right?
I know. And believe me, that's a lot of where I started. And so these are all of these things I've used off and on over the years to help myself get control of what I want, not what's being handed to me. So anything else that you'd like to add before we recap?
Yeah, something that occurred to me about quality of sleep. We talked a lot about the time and not being able to get sleep, but a lot of times people wake up at night a lot. And sometimes that has to do with like sleep apnea. They have, or trouble breathing. Is a huge problem. So one tip I found is to sleep on your side rather than on your back. It's harder for someone to snore, which disrupts the breathing and creates problems that might wake you up when you sleep on your side or on your stomach. Some people, it's not comfortable for me to sleep on my stomach. But when you're sleeping on your back, you're more prone to, if you have extra weight or just the design of your airway is such that you're prone to snoring, sleeping on their side will fix that for a lot of people, not everyone, but a lot of people it does.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And if you do have sleep apnea and your sleep gets interrupted by breathing or snoring, there's a lot of different reasons for that. I'm not going to go into it, but I would talk to a health professional about it because I've known people before and after they got treatment, whatever that treatment is, and it was the difference between day and night. I mean, their anxiety went down. All these things that you don't think has anything to do with your sleep was affected. And what I found was the most interesting thing is once this person got their sleep apnea under control and significantly reduced or eliminated, their anxiety went down. It just never occurred to me. But of course, if you aren't getting high quality of sleep, you're probably dealing with those types of things even during the day. So some of the things that we experience during the day have a lot to do with the quality of sleep that we get at night. So, very, very good to bring that up. And those are things, sleep apnea, snoring, those sorts of things. Those are the types of things that I think a professional, it would be good, you know, to have a professional look at. I will say this, Morgan, that when I was first married, my husband snored, and that just really bothered me. And I decided to figure out what causes people to snore. So I modeled it. I did. And what, you know, I tried to reproduce the sound. Well, what I have to do is close my throat in order to do that. So I did a reframe on him, on the part of him that closes his throat when he breathes at night, and he doesn't snore anymore.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't have, he didn't back then have sleep apnea, but it worked really well. But I had to kind of laugh at myself for modeling it. I thought, what has to be true for a person to make these kinds of sounds at night?
And would you say that the model was pretty unpleasant?
It was very unpleasant. You know, it was very unpleasant, but I was able to reproduce it exactly the way it sounds from him. And once I figured out what he was doing, then all it was a six-step reframe, and it keeps his, you know, throat open. And when his throat is open, then he doesn't snore. Ta-da. So there you go. Okay. So let's go ahead and recap. This is the pattern. First of all, develop a routine that includes low light, relaxation, feeling comfortable. You can use the circle of excellence, but it excludes screen time, lights, TV, alcohol, and heavy foods, and, you know, maybe even some stretching and that sort of thing. All right. The second thing you do is, you know, you get into bed and you turn off the light and you tell yourself that I am going to fall asleep, stay asleep until I'm ready to wake up unless there's danger or someone calls me. All right. Then you can use all kinds of different techniques. You can adjust the submodalities. You can use a counting technique. You can try the lockers. And I find one of the reasons I like options is because sometimes not everything works as well one time as it does another. So you have a variety of choices. So the counting technique or the lockers or the deeper, and adjust the submodalities. Make sure that your body is relaxed, because tense muscles will cause thinking and thinking will cause tense muscles. Slow your breathing. And Morgan suggested breathing in and out of the heart that way, which relaxes the sympathetic nervous system. And make the breathing slightly deeper, but not deep, deep. I find that doing deep, deep breathing can be more stimulating than just slow, steady breath. You know, I'm running the breath, not my body, but it's slightly deeper, but not deep, deep. And then you fall asleep, ta-da, and you will. And before you know it, you're waking up in the morning and you're feeling refreshed and relaxed. So oftentimes, you know, when I turn over and I, you know, my head is down and I've got everything adjusted, all the pillows and everything. And then I think, am I, you know, here's what people do. Sometimes they think about not falling asleep. So, or they think about, you know, am I going to stay awake all night? Am I going to do this? No. And before I know it, you know, I'm thinking, well, when am I going to fall asleep? And then I'm asleep. So it's, and it's taken years of practice, folks. It's not, I was a type A personality. So, and I can still be if I want to. Anything else you would like to add, Morgan?
Well, I'm glad you chose this topic because I think it's really important and not widely understood by many people. You know, I occasionally do a little webinar on how to reduce, you know, stress levels.
Yes.
I mean, this, there's like four foundational things that I cover in there. And this is one of them, falling asleep and getting quality sleep. So super important.
Good, good, good. So thank you all for listening to the Brain Language Podcast. As you know, you can get a hold of us by my email, susan@nlptrainingconcepts.com. And also, please reach out if you have any ideas of what you would like to have as podcasts. You can get a hold of me through my website, by the way, if you want to go that route, nlptrainingconcepts.com. We also have a Facebook group called the Brain Language Group, and there it's a forum for posting articles and exchanging ideas. So there's plenty of opportunity to get a hold of us. And until the next time, have a great night's sleep.
Thank you for listening to the Brain Language Podcast. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes or your favorite listening platform to keep up with our newest episode. Be sure to visit our website, www.nlptrainingconcepts.com, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter by searching NLP Training Concepts to keep up with free resources, upcoming training, and fantastic content. Thank you for joining us and taking our minds to the next level. We'll see you next time.